He pioneered Jets blogging and podcasting. He brought smiles to the faces of Jets fans all over the world. He was there through the good and bad. And then, one day, he vanished. People far and wide wondered, where has he gone? When will he return? Thankfully, the answer is now. The OG of Jets podcasting and vlogging is back.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
This is There's Always Next Year with Brian Bassett.
I'm back. The real me. Let's not make a whole thing of it.
And his co-hosts, Chef Travis Milton.
Today we're going to be making the students my tasty baked ziti with basil and fresh mozzarella.
And Josh Conrad.
Oh, my brother, testify.
On Turn on the Jets Digital.
Welcome back to There's Always Next Year. It's been one game, and there is always next year, my friends. I'm your host, Brian Bassett. You can follow me on Twitter, Brian_Bassett. And with me, as always, are Josh Conrad, who you can find on Twitter at Josh_Conrad, and Travis Milton, who you can follow at -37board27. Well, this has been about the same as it felt like last week or last year. Josh, when you watched this game, what were your thoughts as, let's say, the first half unfolded and then you kind of entered into the second half?
Ooh, what year is it, guys? Like, what is it? Is it 2014? Is it 2009? Like, I can't even tell with this team anymore what my name is. It feels like everything is mind-numbingly the same. We were just talking about this before we started recording, that it feels like, man, every single week with this team is the same story. Obviously, falling behind 21-0, scrambling to get a field goal before half, not how you're hoping to start your first game, especially when there's optimism around year three of Sam Darnold, a new left tackle. Lots of good things happened in this game, but obviously that first half set them back, and they do not have the weapons to come back from a three-score deficit. So it was disappointing by halftime, some glimmers in the second half. Overall, pretty much the same thing for the last, I don't know, 9 years, like kind of the same exact pace as we've all grown as Jets fans.
Man, you guys know generally on you know, the 1 o'clock games, I'm having to watch them at the restaurant during service. Mm-hmm. And there were multiple points in watching this game where I was like, I think I'd be happier going and cleaning the bathrooms. I'd still be dealing with shit, yeah, but at least I would have some sort of a sort of control over it.
It's less embarrassing. Yeah. Less ignominious. Right. So yeah, when you're looking for other tasks or just like, yeah, like, okay, for me, the defining moment of this game came in the third quarter, right? There was this amazing setup where I think it was the third quarter, about 5 minutes left. Jets offense is working. Darnold takes a snap, drops back, throws a bubble screen right to Jamison Crowder. He kind of crouches, collects himself for the blocks to set up. And then he kind of boom, like springs into action. He just blasts right through the secondary, goes into the end zone, I think untouched. He's, he's kind of waiting for somebody to catch him as he gets close to the end zone, thinking like somebody's clearly going to, pull me down. Never happens. Scores a touchdown. And the announcer screams after this play, has happened and he scored the touchdown. And somehow the Jets are still in the ball game. And that, to me, was the defining moment of this game against the Bills. When the announcer is there, focused on the game, they're now, they've cut it to, I guess, they had 9 points at that point before they scored the point after. And it's just like, it's like he's incredulous about the fact that they're still in the game. And so, right, it's like, didn't go any different than I expected, right? The Bills have as much as it bothers me to say, they had a talented team. They've got a star receiver in Stephon Diggs. He was pulling coverage away from some of the other guys who made some good plays. John Brown had a good game. Cole Beasley had a couple good catches, and the rest of their team Allen goes for over 300 yards. I guess that's the first time in his career and the first time for the Bills since 2016, they said.
Yep.
But it was, you know, it was all the same stuff we're used to seeing, right? The self-imposed wounds, defensive pass interference calls. You know, there are some bright spots in the secondary to be sure. But, you know, other players are about as advertised or expected. And it's just this death by a thousand cuts, you know, death by Cole Beasley, you know, kind of situation. And so I was just watching this game and, you know, you start to just like, how much time is left in this game before I can go do something else or right. Go clean the toilets or whatever. So, I mean, I don't know. Was that similarly how you felt as you kind of watched the game unfold, Josh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like in all the ways that we had already tempered some expectations, especially last week with some of the injuries, obviously not having CJ Mosley, Jamal traded away, you know, coming into this week specifically, I had some tempered expectations. The Bills were a playoff team last year. With the expanded playoffs this year, they'll probably be a playoff team again. Like it's
yeah, they're going to be bounced in the first round, but they're like, you know,
they're going to play the Titans on Saturday at 10 a.m. No one's going to see it, but they are going to be in a playoff game. And the Jets are just not great. And then, you know, having, not a great week of practice, having some guys get nicked up, like it was not going to be a good game anyway. But then to come out and feel like, man, like, did they practice this week? Like, what was the game plan looking like? Like, what it felt like by the midway through the second quarter, it almost felt like this team just met each other on Thursday. And it's like, man, there was no adjustment to what personnel were going to be available. And it was just disappointing. It's disappointing to see Sam with very little skill around him. And obviously he did not have a good game. But you know, good quarterbacks make bad teams a little bit better. And I didn't see that this week with Sam. And so not a ton of expectation. And at the same time, I still came away pretty disappointed.
What about you, Travis? What did you think as the game kind of played out?
I mean, there were points kind of like what you were talking about in the third quarter where I was like, you know, that kind of gave me a little bit of hope, tied me back in. And I was like, man, maybe we're going to get a reverse of game one last year. And, you know, the Bills have been, you know, dominating us thus far, and now they're going to falter and you know, we're going to do what they did. And then just looking at the decisions by Sam, some of the play designs, the Adam Gase decisions, I mean, putting Bell back in the game. I mean, it got harder and harder to watch. And, especially with, you know, as you alluded, there were some bright spots, but those bright spots were nowhere near enough. Just looking at the poor decisions, poor throws, poor play calling.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Hey guys, sorry to cut in for a quick second. Just want to thank everybody who's listening to There's Always Next Year and let you know about the fact that winning season is back at MyBookie, and you can double your first deposit when you use the promo code OVERTIME. Just go to MyBookie and use the promo code OVERTIME. You can get in on the action. New players get up to $1,000 in free play. It's designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Chance to win big this season. And if you want to win big, I'll be honest with you, I would bet against the Jets pretty much every week. That seems to be what would yield the most success for you gambling. Just use promo code OVERTIME, double your first deposit, and start winning money over at MyBookie. All right, Brian, sorry to hijack the show for a second. The floor is yours, sir.
What were some of the things that, I mean, if we are going to say, okay, like it's largely what we expected, but you know, here's the places in where I was surprised or delighted or whatever adjective you want to use, like what did stand out that you said, okay, right, that's something we can work with, or you know, has potential. What did you like? What did you like?
I mean, Marcus May, I've been a Marcus May supporter. Like I know I'm the only one on this podcast.
No, he's all right. I tolerate him. I tolerate him. I'm not a fan. I would not buy a Marcus May jersey. I'll just
okay,
say
that. I am the only one that owns a Marcus May jersey, and I have since he got drafted. I bought a May instead of an Adams.
Nice. Smart decision.
Yeah, I know. That's the only smart Jets decision I think I've ever made, like especially if you look at my jersey collection.
How's your Darren Lee jersey doing lately?
I mean, it's probably collecting a little bit of dust. I'm trying to figure out when I'll ever break that out, you know, along with my LeRon Landry. And
yeah, it's a little too soon for ironic, but yeah, I think you're a year or two. Oh, you have a LeRon Landry. You can never go wrong with LeRon Landry.
I still rock that one. And people are like, is that your last name? And I was like, no, no. He actually played 1 year for the Jets.
Trev, you could wear your Osemele jersey with some pride this week. He had a really good game.
Heck yeah.
See, that's one I never bought. And like, I held off on buying any offensive line jerseys this year. Although, you know, looking at Becton in the game, you know, he gave up that sack, gave up a pressure. But outside of that, he was getting good leverage. He was pushing into the freaking, you know, past the line, into the secondary. He looked – I was very impressed because I think I was a little bit – you know, skeptical, especially like the second that pick happened, of him getting taken.
Well, because we were looking at Wirf. I think we got our hearts set on Wirf, thinking Becton would be gone or something would come up and he would drop into the 20s or something like that, right? Like, and so right, it was kind of like, it's not exactly the guy I wanted. I see the physical talent, but right, it's not like he was playing at LSU or Wisconsin or, you know, one of these kind of, you know, typical powerhouse offensive line programs. So there was some uncertainty there, but yeah, I agree with you. I think Mekhi Becton, for a rookie who has had zero preseason abilities and playing against a pretty good defensive line. I thought he acquitted himself well. And right, one of the things that my old buddy Bent, you know, wrote about on SNY yesterday or tonight or last night or this morning was, the fact that like he's a little different when you think about him. Like the last person who was in his shoes was DeBrickshaw Ferguson, right? Rookie left tackle coming in from kind of at the start of the season. So they share that, but then, and that was 14 years ago, right? But the thing that they don't share is that everybody loved Ferguson's ability to pass rush, pass protect, excuse me, versus, and the concern was more about his run blocking. It's kind of inversed, right? With Becton, everybody loves his kind of road gradiness, but we're more concerned about, can he play that, you know, kind of left tackle pass protector, you know, ride the defensive end around position. And so, right, I mean, he's going to give up sacks. That's going to happen. But, you know, he played well in the running game and he acquitted himself well in the passing game. So you say, okay, that's his first game. Like, where is he going to be 2 years from now, 3 years?
Yeah,
from
and he's going against Jerry Hughes. I mean, Jerry Hughes is no scrub. I mean, you know, first game out of college going against Jerry Hughes, I was pretty damn impressed. I thought he had a really, really great game. And I see what Douglas saw in him, and I think he's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I think, yeah, that's promising. What else was promising, Josh?
Yeah, I felt really good, obviously, about Becton. I agree with all that stuff. And then just in the secondary, I mean, I feel like we felt a few months ago when the Jamal trade happened, like, man, this is going to be another kind of open wound on this roster. And bless Austin, Marcus May played really well, felt really good about some of the things that even defensively, it felt like Marcus May sliding in almost to that Jamal Adams role of busting things up around the line of scrimmage. And so that was good. You know, there were some things, obviously, like, you know, you can't give up 300 yards to Josh Allen and feel great. So, no. You know, I mean, I say those two things, that those guys had pretty good games. In the grand scheme, it wasn't the best day as a secondary, as a unit, obviously. But, you know, I also felt pretty good about just how do I get here? Le'Veon Bell, and I know we could probably spend a week here, felt like, man, like if coming into this game, sounding like last week, Adam Gaysen had been maybe buried this hatchet, and he's saying we really want to get him the ball more in space. Obviously, Lev kind of through training camp not feeling super great, and then being tossed back into a game. You know, you can read between some of the context and some of the subtext that might be there, of Adam Gase maybe trying to prove that he's right and putting a hurt player back in, and Love Bell in a no-win situation. You know, if nothing else, like, what's coming out that's good from this is maybe this is just another piece of the puzzle in having a new head coach coming up within the next year or so. That's the only other good spot I can think of.
Yeah, well, we'll circle back around to our friend Adam Gase here shortly. I'm sure we have lots to say, but yeah, I think you hit on a number of the things that I saw at, you know, as highlights in the game. You know, Marcus May sliding into that Greg Williams role, Greg Williams kind of Jamal Adams role. You know, I mean, we'll see how it plays out over the course of the season. I think Marcus May is a fine starter. You know, they brought in Bradley McDougal who got that great opportunistic fumble recovery, just kind of ball popped into his hands when Marcus May was the one who forced the fumble on a Josh Allen rush. And then, right, two sacks. I think it's the first two-sack game he's ever had. And then bless Austin, right, he played well in the secondary. But, right, you know, Brian Poole played about as well as you'd expect Brian Poole to play. You know, there were other places where it was not as great. Yeah, we saw the situation with the safety, the new safety, Ashton Davis, where he coughed up the ball on that kick return by, you know, trying to earn some style points, let's say, going over that guy. Yeah. That was not great. So it's like, if you're really, really, really fast, why are you taking your feet off the ground, right? Like, the best thing you can do is keep your feet on the ground and understand he'd committed to the angle and the angle got blocked. But it's like, if you're really fast as everybody says you are from your track days or whatever, like, why are you putting yourself in the worst situation? Anyway, that's for another day. Rookie mistake. Right. Just consider this the preseason in terms of, you know, these guys feeling out what it's like to play in the NFL and kind of their ability to anticipate holes closing and things. But then Jamison Crowder, right? Another studly day. You know, now largely who else was catching the ball? I mean, you had the corpse of Breshad Perriman. You had Chris Herndon, you know, making football moves and dropping the ball. And Denzel Mims not out there, right? So it had to be the Jamison Crowder show, and then also, right, Lev Bell being injured and that sort of thing. So it's a tough situation where I think Crowder did more than anyone expected, and like, man, would he have been a great DFS play if you were a, you know, DFS grinder in week one. Now the question is, what happens with Mims? I think it will only get more interesting when Mims comes back, because I think you're going to get more it's going to soften up the defense even more, and you'll have more ability to work. But, right, like, we're now getting into a place with Denzel Mims with hamstring issues. Like, I don't need him to go for 1,000 yards this year, guys, but I'm starting to get concerned when it comes to Denzel Mims, because how do I say this? When you look at the numbers, right, for rookies, they don't need to, rookie wide receivers specifically, they don't need to have amazing years, but they do need to be productive, right, for them to continue success versus to Laquon Treadwell themselves in the NFL, right? So,
oh, yeah.
So are you guys starting to get worried about Mims like I am, or you know, do you think just it'll be a little bit more time and he'll come on, and, you know, because there's just such an opening in terms of what this offense needs, he'll get incorporated right in. What are your thoughts, Travis?
I think if he can get healthy, I mean, I don't think that there's going to be any shortage of opportunities for him. I mean, as you said, our wide receiver group outside of Crowder is just, it's dog shit. I mean, Perriman, I get what Douglas was going for.
Yeah, he's very fast. He's a lid lifter, and that's fine, and we need that.
And, you know, I don't have a lot of faith in our wideouts. So I think that he's going to get every opportunity possible, and it might even be a good thing him being hurt, because, you know, all these guys are going to do is go out and showcase how terrible they are in the meantime. So, you know, once he can get okay, maybe get some kind of cybernetic hamstring or something that doesn't, you know, blow out every week and a half. I think he's going to get, you know, every opportunity in the world. I'm more worried about just after that first game, and I know it's first game, I shouldn't be, you know, going to the, you know, the end of the world on this, but just seeing the decisions that Darnold was making, that's my biggest worry, I think, on the team outside of the offensive line.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? Are you worried about Mims yet, Josh, or what do you think?
I, I am. I mean, when they started floating that he might even land on the IR, which I know is different this year. It's only a few weeks, but that obviously is more than just like, hey, like the other hamstring is tweaked. Like to go a month or so on a bad hamstring, really missing all that, you know, in the weirdest training camp year of in league history. And then to have your other hamstring get tweaked just before the opener is like, man, what's happening here? So I'm concerned. Like I'm not, you know, we're not cracking the glass case and sounding the alarm, but you know, I'm looking around the room, seeing where that alarm button is so I can push it the moment that we need to announce an emergency here. But listen, that's the problem though. Like this is where we're at as a roster. Is if our rookie wide receiver can't get on the field, we're in trouble. And so that just kind of tells you again, like it's just another moment of like, this is where the roster's at. It's where the confidence lies with coaching staff. And so I'm hopeful for him. I mean, I think the world of him, and I think Joe Douglas brought him in for a reason. I think he really had his eyes on him in the draft. And so I'm hoping he gets on the field, but I'm concerned at this point as to what that timetable is looking like. And late breaking news, it's also looking like it might be a couple weeks here for Lev Bell and Blake Cashman. Oh. Adam Gase saying he's not sure when they could be back. It might be a few weeks there. And yeah. So
Cashman broke his collarbone, right? So you have to think that's at least a month, if not 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, for a guy like Lev, like this could turn into, man, I don't feel good yet. And maybe this is like what happened yesterday, being forced back in the game or going back in is just like, screw it. I'm not playing for this team anymore. Like he has precedent here of not playing when he doesn't want to play. So I'm officially concerned about Lev Bell as well.
Yeah, I think that's totally valid. And I mean, the thing that even, you know, even makes it worse is the fact that, right, he has gone out of his way to defend this, let's say, coaching staff and or front office. Let's say the front office. We'll say he's gone out of his way to protect the front office. But, right, like there is this strong feeling that you have around him that once that switch flips, clearly as happened with the Steelers, like once that flip switch, it is never going back. Right. Like this is a one way street, and he will be completely loyal until he feels like he has been, you know, disrespected long enough. And then like, there's no going back on that. So, right. I think that's a fair point to say, hey, that's a question and that's something you need to concern yourself with. And so, yeah. So we need to talk though about, you talked about Gase. We've danced around it a little bit. We do need to talk about Adam Gase. And so I have a question for you both. Travis, I'll start with you. Over, under, what week will the Fire Adam Gase billboards start appearing off the New Jersey Turnpike? I will also allow planes flown overhead of practice facilities and or games that have messages. What week does that happen this year?
I've already started a GoFundMe to get the guys flying the Astros asterisk signs over top of the ravine to try to get to New York like as quick as possible. I'm on it. Like if it's anything that I can do more, like hopefully week two, man. Like I don't understand how there aren't these billboards like the Idzik billboards already. Man, I would put one up outside of Teterboro in an instant if I had the money. But yeah, I give it maybe like three more weeks till people hit that insane breaking point. But I don't know. Like I see so many damn apologists on Twitter that you know I don't get it. I don't get it. He's just so bad. I'm hoping by week three. I'll say that.
Okay, Josh, what do you think? Over under on billboards and or sky messages.
I am betting, so if you forecast out a few weeks here, we get the Patriots in week 9, would be the second week of November. It's a Thursday night game, I believe. I would not be shocked if we have both billboards and a plane overhead during the game on Thursday, November 9th against the Patriots. Because if you look at the schedule, guys, it ain't looking pretty. Like we've talked about this in the past, but maybe there's one or two winnable games. And the one that's winnable is also a Thursday nighter on October 1st. And so and that's against the Broncos. But other than that, we've got the Niners, the Colts, the Broncos, the Cardinals, the Chargers, the Bills again, the Chiefs, who we're definitely not beating, and then the Patriots game, and then the Dolphins after that. So an 0-8 start is a real possibility. And I think by the time we get to 0-6, I think that's when payments are being made and flight plans are being established and Teterboro Airport is being told that there's a plane on the runway on November 9th against the Patriots. That's actually that might be a Monday night game, as a matter of fact. It is a Monday night game. So just plan on Jets-Patriots Monday night, November 9th. We are staring at Fire Adam Gase on a plane over MetLife Stadium.
I'll tell you, if stimulus checks ever actually do go through, I am fully on board with spending my entire one just to try to make this happen.
I'm not much of a – I don't really follow Mike Greenberg literally at all, but I know he's been – this is – today we're taping this on Monday. He has been strong today, a Monday, against Gase, you know, saying Gase is the problem with the Jets. I think he said he's not equipped to coach a youth football
fifth grade team.
A fifth grade team. So I don't know if this is a big turn for Greenberg, because I just largely ignore what he says and just kind of ESPN by large. But I'm curious, like there is, if it hasn't already happened, right, we're getting to that crescendo moment. And so I don't know where we go from here. But it feels like when people are coming out strongly in his, you know, that he needs to go and that he's the problem. Like, you know, I'm not going to say I said this the moment they were even considering hiring him, but that was my stated case at that time. I guess at this point, right, like this is where they are. Who knows whether this organization will, you know, realize the terrible mistake they made in hiring this guy. But like, is there any way to lessen his impact, right? Or like to for this team, like can this team succeed despite Adam Gase? I guess that's my question. What do you think, Josh?
It's hard, right? I mean, it would be hard for this team, as undermanned as they are. They don't have that plucky upstart thing going to them yet, and so maybe, you know, maybe if Sam just starts to become a very vocal leader in the locker room, if Marcus May steps fully into Jamal's shoes and really becomes the mouthpiece for that defense, like maybe if there's a player's kind of not even revolt, but like a player's, taking of the wheel from him, at least publicly or even privately in Jets circles, maybe there's a chance here that the team can rally behind something else. But the problem is, once that happens, the story isn't that Sam and Marcus and, you know, Mekhi and, Lev Bell, if he's even still around at that point, are moving the team forward. It'll be that Adam Gase has lost the locker room. And I really do think, like, you know, as understated as it might be, I think we might look back in a month and realize, like, this rift with Lev Bell and putting him back in and then kind of saying, hey, it was kind of a mistake. You know, Lev Bell doesn't have a choice. Like, if he wants to play in the future, you go back in the game. Like, it's not like you can just, like, hang out on the sideline. He's already in, you know, an older running back. And so, he's going to go back in. But, man, I can't imagine what the conversations, the text messages, the group chats are like these last, 24 hours or 20 hours since that loss solidified. But, man, I can't think it's good. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's a way to minimize the destruction that Adam Gase has caused to this organization. But again, I still think it starts with Woody Johnson's ownership. I think it's just bled through the culture of that building. You know, we were having the same conversations around Todd Bowles, except that it was just the man looked catatonic at all times. And so with Adam Gase, you're getting very little things, but the things you do get are revealing. I mean, he's in his press conference even today was just saying, you know, we had a lot of misfires, a lot of miscues, and then asked about his play calling. He said, there's not one call that I regret. And so it's his player's fault. It's not his. And
yeah,
man, is there just like, yeah, there's no ownership in this. Like, you know, Trav, for like, if the restaurant was going down, like knowing you, like as a good man, a good leader of like your staff,
it's all on me.
Yeah, you say this starts with me, and you protect them, even if it is their fault. You say I'm going to be the one to take the charge on this thing. And so when he does none of that, man, every guy in that locker room knows like he doesn't have our back. Like he has no respect for us, and I think a revolt is coming, and I cannot welcome it fast enough.
Thoughts, Travis? Anything to add there?
I mean, like Josh hit part of that like really on the nose with. I mean, it's hard to create leaders as someone who does this as part of my job is, you know, it's nurturing people to lead. It's hard to create leaders when you don't lead yourself. Like when you don't hold yourself accountable, it's really hard to push all the accountability on people and then expect them to rise up within that. Like that's just a total lack of accountability and bullshit way of looking at things on Gase's part. And I think my biggest worry is, you know, he is essentially the end all be all for Sam Darnold in this organization. Like he is the offensive coordinator. He is the head coach. He is teaching this 23-year-old quarterback that has all of these tools and talents how to think like him. And that's where I look at, you know, the decision-making that Darnold is making on the field. There are things that it's blurred. Did Gase do that? Did you know, was that a design play? No, that wasn't a design play. That's something that Darnold checked out of. That seems like something that Adam Gase would have done. And it's really damning looking at things like that. And I don't see any way of remotely fixing this franchise unless he is taken out of the equation completely.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at the next month, right? So they get the Niners who are 0-1, but you know, I mean, let's face it, you know, they're a team that was 13-3 last year. They're, you know, licking their wounds from an amazing, you know, levitating game from DeAndre Hopkins and the Cardinals. They get the 49ers coming up this week. And then, you know, you have the Colts who are a, you know, decently put together team with, you know, some good talent. And then the Broncos, you know, they're after. So it's not like you have some cream puffs coming up here. And like I'm already hearing from fellow Jets fans, friends, you know, by texts or whatever, that like, you know, like they're already saying after the first game, you know, don't mess with them getting the top overall spot. Like I can't. I get it. I understand. I can't co-sign that because like I always am going to want this team to win at the same time. Right. I do understand this idea of, you know, kind of undercutting yourself at your chances of, you know, getting a top playoffs, a top draft pick next year. But I mean, you've got teams like the Jaguars who are actively from a front office standpoint, like trying to lose this season, despite the fact that they actually won their game. And things like there are other teams that are making similar moves. And so it's hard for me to sign off on that. But at the same time, I get and understand that the more games that Gase wins, the more muddy the waters become on whether this is the right or wrong person. Right. And there was even articles last week that we talked about, you know, that Gase, it's not fully tied to getting to the playoffs or not. It's, you know, other improvement. But the other thing, and this is even more scary, is like people that are talking about getting high draft picks, like they're also entertaining the idea that they want, you know, a new quarterback, right? They want, you know, they want, you know, the top quarterback in the class. And so like we're now to a point where Adam Gase and his decision making and the tethering, as you said, Travis, like very wisely there, like those two are too closely linked. And I don't know if we're going to get a good chance of getting a sense of whether or not Gase is, you know, is fully pulling Darnold down, or it's Darnold and Gase, or it's just Darnold or whatever. But like, there are already people that want to see the next quarterback. And that to me is super depressing, right? That's the worst thing about this whole thing. Yep. So, So we're in a bad situation, and I don't know, you know, maybe the Jets will surprise us, but it's not a great start to the season. It's not a great start for the offense. And so I certainly think we're going to see more improvement, but yeah, there were some good things. Anything we can, take away other kind of, before we go, gentlemen, anything that comes to mind that you say, you know what, it was all terrible, but like, here's a silver lining. Any silver linings?
Bryce Hall was not on the field. So I still think and have fully, have every bit of faith in that dude. And I swear to God, like, maybe not year one, but I really want to see him on the field. And I think that it's going to be, you know, he can't be any worse than Hairston. He can't be any worse than Desir, at least the way they played yesterday. Bless Austin was great. And I really, really am looking forward to seeing Avery Williamson back on the field.
Yeah. Anything else, Josh? Other silver linings?
The only thing, and this is going to make Travis rejoice, like the offensive line PFF grades are out. Alex Lewis, Mekhi Becton, Greg Roten, amongst our leaders, George Fant, Connor McGovern, not one guy graded less than 58, which is pretty
that's awesome. Hot. That's fire.
That is competent offensive linesmanship, if I might say so myself. No, I mean, great grades for Becton and Lewis and Roten, and then Fant and McGovern a little lower. But man,
that
like,
have never been on the field together. So
so
it's all that Call of Duty. It's all that Call of Duty they played in the offseason, I think.
That's right. Competent offensive line play. Now, if we could just, you know, make some plays happen.
Yeah, I think to the point, of your silver linings, I like kind of your point on Bryce Hall. And so we already talked about Denzel Mims, but yeah, I think that'll be mine. And I get that that's insane, but like, right, he's not on the field. We haven't even seen him. He hasn't done anything yet, but I do think he's the sort of player, his college production is proof of it and his measurables are proof of it, that he's going to make this a better team, you know, the instant he can step on the field. So I am looking forward to that. I hope that comes soon, maybe even this week, but I don't know. We'll just have to see. They didn't put him on IR like Deebo Samuel, so the thought is if they didn't do that, then, right, we might see him week two, week three, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thanks very much. Everyone, please rate and review this podcast. Go to Play Like a Jet. Listen to all the awesome content they have this week. We will see you next week on Tuesday after the San Francisco Niners game in the Jets home opener at MetLife Stadium. And we will have lots to talk about then. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about Adam Gase. And maybe, just maybe, there will have been a skywriting message or a billboard painted in next week. Fingers crossed. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
I'm going to go drink some Rumple Mints because I rewatched that game before we did this podcast.